I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time is time for public comment. Anyone wishing to comment on any subject not on our agenda today? If there's no one, then we will go to the consent calendar. Is there anyone on the board who wishes to pull or make a motion?
Motion to approve consent calendar.
Second? You send it? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Pass.
We're a little early right now for our scheduled agenda. So why don't we, can we do this? Okay. We will then go to B4, which is Jerry Howard.
Jerry, as your staffer comes and begins to get set up, can you provide us just a little background relative to item B3 that was approved during the consent agenda?
B3 was put before you on the consent calendar. Essentially, VLF, which we've been talking about for the better part of the last year, expired on June 30th, which was the vehicle license fee. That was approximately $1.2 million in juvenile justice crime prevention funding for the probation department that funded our high-risk offender programs and several support staff. We anticipated correctly that tax would expire, and we did not budget those funds for this fiscal year. We, through attrition, were able to reduce those programs. Well, as part of the whole realignment discussion that I'm going to talk about in item B4, as part of our discussions with the governor, we essentially explained that you can't go and expect us to take on additional responsibilities at the county level if you're going to gut us on this other side with the VLF funding expiring. Well, they weren't able to work out an extension of that tax, but the legislature and the governor worked together to find an alternative way to fund those programs, the vehicle license fee programs that had been funded, of which Juvenile Justice Crime Prevention Act was one of those, to the tune of about $1.2 million, as I said. So what they did was they imposed a vehicle registration fee of $12 and an offset with a portion of state sales tax to make those funds whole. So we will no longer get vehicle license fee funding for the programs, but the programs are fully funded going forward and, frankly, are more securely funded going forward than the vehicle license fee, which we saw expired. So what that agenda item does is asks to restore those positions that we had vacated through attrition back into a funded status so that we can fill them and ramp those programs back up that we decreased. Frankly, the funding amount, part of the good news behind this is these will be new hires for the probation department because we didn't lay staff off. We'll be able to hire some new individuals. And the funding amount that is coming will be about 20% more than what we previously got. So this is a very conservative request in front of your board today to restore part of those positions so that we make sure that we've got enough money going forward to continue those programs. We will probably be back in September at final budget to ask to restore more of the positions associated with that funding. But it is good news for us.
Is the $12 being challenged by anyone?
No.
$12 fee?
No. Because it's a statutorily authorized fee, it basically is being redirected to counties from the DMV fund. So it's not a new fee. It's just redirected.
Any additional questions? Okay. If not, then...
We'll do B4 now.
There you go.
Okay.
I'll open that to the public. Are you?
No, I've got a PowerPoint for you on B4. That was B3.
Excuse me.
Don't count that time against my B4 time.
Lead the way.
Item B4 is before you to ask for a couple of recommendations related to the public safety realignment, also known as AB 109, which is the state's shift of of state-level prisoners back to local county jurisdiction. I should say some state-level prisoners back to local county jurisdiction. There are two recommendations that we need from this board prior to August 1st so that we can go forward with our planning processes. The recommendations are, number one, to designate the probation department as the supervising entity for parolees that are returned to county jurisdiction, and number two, to designate the Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services as the seventh member of the Executive Committee of the Community Corrections Partnership. And I will go into a little bit more detail on both of those. We talk about public safety realignment. It means that there's about 300 pages involved of legislative pages involved in this realignment, but in a nutshell, this is what it means. Number one, it means those individuals convicted of specified felonies of 3 years or less will be housed in county jail instead of state prison. What it doesn't mean, and there is some confusion, is there may be individuals who spend more than 3 years in local custody in our county jail system because of consecutive terms, they commit multiple felonies and things like that. So we could conceivably have an individual spend 6 years in our county jail instead of going to state prison. Number two, it means parole violators will no longer go to prison to serve their time. They'll stay in county jail to serve all their time. The current system, a parolee in our community gets rearrested by a parole agent or by local law enforcement and gets placed into the county jail. They spend a period of their time in the county jail, and then they're transferred to state prison where that parole violation is adjudicated by the parole board, and then they're given additional time to spend in the state prison before they come back out. The realignment proposal or the new realignment plan is those individuals will no longer go to state prison. They will spend their entire parole violation time in our county jail. And number three, approximately 60% of parolees released from state prison will be released to the probation supervision as well as individuals from number one who will be released from local custody and will be responsible to probation. We're going to get two populations here under the probation officer. Individuals who are currently in state prison doing their time in state prison, who are coming out on parole, those lower level offenders who come out on parole will be assigned to the probation officer after your actions today, will be assigned to the probation officer. Additionally, those individuals at some point about 3 years down the road, they will no longer be in state prison because they will be spending all of their time in county jail. When those guys come out, they will then come onto the probation caseload. So as the state prison population decreases and the number of individuals placed on the local parole under probation decreases, the individuals coming out of the county jail system who were given state prison sentence will increase. So we will see a net impact to the probation department of somewhere around 500 to 600 individuals per year placed on probation supervision. Next slide, please. Here's some of the numbers. For the fiscal year 2011-12, this is programmed to start on October 1st. Here are our best estimates from CDCR as to what the local impacts are going to be. We're going to have 250 individuals sentenced to county jail on new felony offenses who will no longer go to state prison. I think District Attorney Flatiger calls it pretend prison. They will stay in local jails for the term of their prison commitment. Those 215 will happen over the remaining 9 months of the fiscal year. In other words, they won't all hit on October 1st. Some will go in on October, some will go in June. So it's not a huge drop into our local jail system. 76 parole violators over that 9-month period will no longer go to state prison for parole violations. And 512 parolees will be released from the state prison system and monitored by probation officers in our community. That's just the first 9 months of the implementation of this. I know the questions. Is this another unfunded state mandate? And if so, how can we possibly pay for this? Good questions, valid questions. I know the sheriff has those same concerns. Next slide, please. Currently, we're projected to get $6 million from the state of California to pay for the first 9 months of this realignment program. Frankly, the formula that was used by the state to fund us, unlike many realignments previously, is actually pretty fair to Stanislaus County. It, it does a pretty good job of addressing our initial costs. The concern going forward by the sheriff and everyone else, as well as you folks, I'm sure, is will the money be sustainable? Will the state come back in 3 years and reduce it? What's going to happen? There's no constitutional guarantee for that this funding will continue. Frankly, it is what it is. It's happening. We're going to make the best of it. So now we have to figure out our task going forward is to figure out what are we going to spend that $6 million on. That's where your Community Corrections Partnership Board comes into play. The Community Corrections Partnership Board, of which you're designating the Behavioral Health Director as part of, was created to guide counties toward a plan that addresses the most effective ways to integrate this realigned population and maximize public safety and use the taxpayer dollars in the most efficient, effective way possible. There are two parts to the CCP, the full committee and the executive committee. The full committee consists of that list that you see there. Probably the smartest thing the legislature did in this entire thing was make the chief probation officer the chair of that committee. You can see it's a broad-based committee. It includes public sector, it includes law enforcement, public safety, it includes the public defender, the courts, the district attorney, and it may include others as necessary. Next slide, please. The executive committee of that committee consists, again, brilliantly of the chief probation officer as chair, chief of police from the county, from a city in the county, the sheriff, the DA, the public defender, the presiding superior court judge, a representative appointed by the board of supervisors of one of the, those three programs that we talked about, of which you're going to designate the person today. Next slide. The role of the executive committee, frankly, is to adopt a plan that's prepared by that Community Corrections Partnership Committee and forward to you a plan of how to spend that $6 million and how, in what programs and in what ways to most effectively reintegrate that realigned population into the county services. We anticipate the plan is going to be fairly broad in nature and flexible for those involved because we really don't have a good idea of the exact numbers and the impacts or needs of those numbers on our system. I'm anticipating that at the end of the day, we're going to see an expansion of several of our existing programs that are outlined there. Detention beds, we have vacant jail beds, we can certainly bring some of those online. Probation supervision, our day reporting center will probably get larger, alternative work programs in the Sheriff's Department, in custody prevention programs, drug court, maybe some community prevention programs as well. I think you'll see a broad spectrum of programs involved. Some of the programs will be what we're going to call phase one programs, which are needed immediately to incorporate this population back into the county, and some will happen in year two or maybe even in year three as our funding grows. The CCP report will be given to you, I anticipate, in mid to late September. The executive committee is required to vote on that recommendation prior to forwarding it to you. It will come to your board, and your board can either adopt it or reject it and return it for further deliberations by the CCP. In order to reject it, it takes a four-fifths vote of your board to reject that plan. Next slide, please. This public safety realignment is going to require an entire change of our criminal justice system in Stanislaus County. Everyone, local police, prosecution, public defender, probation, courts, everyone will change under this realignment. The way we sentence individuals, how long individuals spend in custody, it all will change. As I've said previously, our system will look much different a year from now and even more different 2 and 3 years from now than it looks today. We're well situated to accomplish the task. We get along well. We work together well. And we have a lot of the infrastructure in place that we're going to need to address this realigned population. We're not going to have to stand up a lot of new programs. We're not going to have to build a 500-bed jail. We're not going to have to do those kinds of things that can be very expensive. We believe we're going to be able to expand existing programs, which is much easier to do than to build a program from the dirt up. The sheriff and probation will see the most significant impacts, I think, as you see by the numbers. The vast majority of these numbers are going to fall directly on the sheriff or myself. We've got a long history of working well together, and we're both committed to making this work for our county. There's going to be challenges, and there are going to be examples of where this doesn't work. We are going to have one of these guys who comes to our county, gets sentenced to state prison, spends it in county jail, comes out, and does something bad. I can tell you that with absolute certainty, that is going to happen. But there will be many more examples of where it does work. I'm absolutely 100% confident, given the resources we have here, the partnerships, the collaborations with local programs, the courts, everyone, that these programs will be more effective than they are at the state level. These folks currently come out of the state of California's system, the prison system, worse than when they went in. I can promise you, and I'm absolutely certain, that will not be the case in these programs here locally. If you've ever attended a drug court graduation, if you've ever come to our day reporting center or gone out on ride-alongs with probation officers or sheriff's deputies, we have the infrastructure and we've got the commitment and the personnel here to make this thing work much better than it does at the state of California. The last thing, and I did not put this on here because I'm not absolutely confident of the figure yet, but at full implementation, the $6 million that we're looking at now, I anticipate will come into, at full implementation, will be somewhere between $17 and $20 million annually in 3 to 4 years if the state doesn't monkey with it. So with that, that concludes my presentation. I'd ask for your approval of those two recommendations and certainly be more than willing to answer any questions, and the sheriff, I'm sure, would, if you have questions for him, would be available as well.
Any questions?
I would like to make a couple points that I think are very relevant, specifically relative to AB 117. First, I do support the Chief Probation Officer's recommendations, given the alternatives to supporting and implementing AB 117 and beginning the process of realigning public safety programs. However, I want to make it crystal clear that there are two aspects of the implementation legislation that I believe will put this county at risk financially and organizationally. The first is the requirement for a 4/5 vote to overturn the executive committee's recommendation. That means four of you are going to have to disagree with the recommendation of the executive committee in order to send it back to them for it to be reworked. Second is that under the current bill, the chief executive officer, who is also the county's chief budget official, does not have a seat as a voting member on the executive committee. It can be a member of the larger committee, but it does not have a vote as a member of the executive committee. That being said, it is the best opportunity that we have to get some funding for programs that are coming our way, which otherwise would be our responsibility even absent the funding. And so even with those shortcomings in this legislation, and clearly public safety had a higher seat at the table than did county boards of supervisors or county executive officers, and they seem to have gotten their way here.
Supervisor O'Brien?
Good.
Okay. Anyone else?
Hey, can I ask a question about the earlier bill that we passed, the $1.2 million that you're going to receive? Does that make you whole in this whole project so that when we receive $6 million, because I'm more concerned about jail space, I'm more concerned about at $100 a day, you know, per inmate, that's where it seems like we have the most exposure if we're forced to house them.
The agenda item B3 is for juvenile justice, the juvenile justice side of the house, as well as administrative support. Okay. So There is some overlap, but it's really in two different. We initially have both of those items going as one agenda item, and we split them apart because of that. So I don't know that we're ever whole. This will kind of return the juvenile side of my house as well as the administrative parts of it, get it back up to where it should be, which will take some heat off of the adult side of the house because they're not having to go and pick up some of those overload cases and things like that. So it's a good start.
Okay. I just have some questions, and our jails are virtually always full all the time, and then we're going to get all these inmates from the state prison. I don't see how we have the capacity to handle that if we're still under the court order where we have a limited amount of people that we can put in the jails.
Well, I think part of the thing is we're not getting anyone from state prison back into our jails. They're just not going to go from our jails into the state prison system. So that's a distinction. And it's an important distinction because once they get into the state prison system, they get involved in the prison gangs and things like that, and they become much more difficult to handle. So the sheriff's going to end up keeping individuals. Instead of transporting them off to state prison, they're going to stay. What this does mean, though, from a population management standpoint, is we're going to have to do a couple things. Number one is we're going to have to open up some of those jail beds that were closed that when the sheriff had rifts. That are closed now. We're going to have to use some of that $6 million to pay for some of those deputies to come back and staff those beds. Number two is we're going to have to work really hard looking at the lower end of the population, and the sheriff will tell you there's really not much of a lower end from a risk standpoint in his jail, to see if we can move some of those folks out, expand. When I talked about the alternative work programs, put some of those individuals out cleaning our parks and our reservoirs and things like that, so we can create space in the jail for those upper-level guys that would have gone to state prison that are now going to stay in that jail bed longer. So it's going to be a balancing act, and it's not going to be an easy one. It certainly would be much harder had we not got $6 million to do this.
And we're still under the same court order where we have a limit.
Absolutely.
To what we can put in the jails. I see this is really difficult for us to be able to do this.
It's not going to be easy, but I think I would stress, and I think the sheriff and the district attorney are right there with me, you know, if anybody can do this, our county can pull it off because we work well together and we're creative and we've got day reporting centers and we've got those kinds of things that we can use to deal with that lower-end population. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back, like I said, in mid to late September with a much more comprehensive report with numbers about how we're going to manage the jail population, what it looks like now, how many beds we're going to have to reopen, and those kinds of things.
Well, the first work crew that goes out to the park should go to Laird Park because that's the one that needs it the most.
I think every park could use some.
Does the alternative work program, do they have to be supervised?
Yes.
Folks?
Yeah.
So they have to be supervised.
And there's nothing that prevents using this money to pay for deputies to supervise these guys.
Well, did I misinterpret? I thought I heard that the $6 million was for the first 9 months.
Yes.
Okay. And that is to implement the program, whatever that means. Then after that money is gone after 9 months, then it's up to us. Come up with the addition?
No, we'll get a new allocation next fiscal year. It's a sales tax set aside. 1.06% of the sales tax, the state sales tax, is being diverted to pay for this. Frankly, the way this works financially for the state is this is about a $5 billion realignment. And what it does is it takes that $5 billion out of the state general fund, relieves the state of the Prop 48 obligation, the school's obligation, Prop 98, about 48% of the general fund goes to schools. So by pulling this $5 billion out, the state makes about $2 billion in savings because it doesn't have to make that Prop 98 match. And so that's really where the state's making the money. If you look at the figures, the state will tell you that they're essentially giving us the same amount of money that it would cost them to deal with these folks. I'm a little dubious of that. I think that there's some savings on the natural for them, but there's absolutely savings to them on the school obligation side of it. And I'm certain there's a deal cut with schools to make that up at some point.
And I also want to point out that there's a several-year phase-in of this program. So the $6 million is for the initial year, but no state prisoners will be shifted from state prison, who are currently sentenced state prisoners, to a county jail in the interim as they parole out.
Right.
They go back into the population. If they reoffend, they could wind up in the county jails. However, there isn't a mass transfer of state prisoners to county jails resultant from this.
And that's why I say that 215 figure that I gave you, some of those will come in October, a handful in October, a handful in November, a handful in December, January. They won't all come on October 1st in a mass transfer from the state prison system. That's not how this works. It's prospective starting October 1st.
Hello? There we go. So the $6 million, Jerry, it sounds like you'll come back in September with a budget for us on the $6 million, but it sounds like we're not going to spend all $6 million. Do you anticipate we won't spend this?
It's my hope that we have a little bit of money that we leave in reserve for those kind of unknown things that come up. But the model that I have in my mind, and frankly this is all part of the CCP deliberations, is a lot like what we did with the ICGIS Commission, where we had monthly meetings, ongoing meetings to address for ICGIS those programming issues that came up and prioritize where we wanted to spend our money. I would anticipate that you would see a plan coming from the CCP board that spends, a certain percentage of the money, but keeps a certain portion of the pot in reserve for some unknown or unforeseen issues that come up. And frankly, if we're really good and none come up, then we've got that much more money for year two that we can use going forward.
Okay, so the CCP... we'll put together that budget. We will approve it with a 4/5 vote. You will approve it with a 2/5 vote, and you will deny it with a 4/5 vote.
Okay.
And then the other thing you said is you thought that it would go up to 17 to 20 million.
Yeah.
And where does that come from?
Because it grows the pot. It's first year we were programmed to get about $8 million. If it had started on July 1, but because we lose the first quarter, it's dropped to $6 million. As the numbers, as the rollout of realignment happens, those numbers will increase. That 215 in year two will grow to about 450, and in year three will grow to about 512. Those parolees that are coming out will decrease, but I'll get some of those coming out. So my numbers will go gradually up to 600, 700, 800. And those numbers drive how much of the pot we get. So that's why I say our number will incrementally grow over about a 3-year period, and then it will, as the realignment is finally implemented and done, it will plateau.
Okay, and the CCP will have discretion as to how to spend that money. There won't be a ton of strings attached to that money. Is that?
My hope is that it's a flexible program that we put before you. In other words, the sheriff certainly has intentions on reactivating some detention beds and expanding his work program. But it may be that initially he needs more deputies to go to his work program. But as more individuals are sentenced by the courts to state prison, he wants to increase his detention beds. He can redeploy it. So those deputies are flexible. They can work program. They can do. So we will allocate, or we will ask you to allocate a certain number of positions for the sheriff to use flexibly in detentions, in work programs, electronic monitoring programs, things like that. So then he deploys them as best fits his population. For probation, it would be the same thing. We'll ask for a certain number of probation officers to do community supervision, day reporting center, GPS electronic monitoring, and then we will deploy them as the population presents itself and based on their risk, the risk to the community. Lower risk ones, they don't need to take up a jail bed. We'll go put them in a community program, things like that. Whereas if we're too rigid and we say you have to have 200 jail beds open, frankly, that's the most expensive thing that we can do, And if the sheriff doesn't need them, then those beds sit vacant, and we're paying a lot of money for them. So that's where I say flexibility in the design. That's my hope, anyways.
Yes. As the responsibility change and we get more of the responsibility and more of the money, the only way the state's going to save on this is if they reduce their labor force,
exactly,
which the state doesn't do. And so I guess my question is, are there strings to this that we're going to have to employ some of the state's employees?
That was part of the discussions, frankly. I had no interest in taking on state parole agents. They make significantly more than my staff does. Frankly, many of my staff have gone on to be state parole agents, and God bless them. But I've got staff who want to work for me, who are working in my institution and things like that. So there was absolutely no agreement. They would have to go through the same hiring process as anyone off the street. We were not willing to take on any state obligations with respect to employees, contracts, or anything like that.
Very good. Thank you.
So is the state saying that they are going to lay off parole officers?
We have been told that that is their intention. We have not seen a single pink slip out of the state of California yet. But we'll see 9 months from now as the prison population decreases and as the parole population decreases. If they don't, shame on them. They won't get the savings that they programmed into this. Sheriff, did you
care? Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I think it's important that you understand the numbers that Supervisor DeMartini was referring to, just so you kind of have an idea of where we're at on bed space. First of all, I will tell you that Chief Powers has hit all of the high points. And again, I think that you need to understand the value and benefit of the relationship here. This is something that you don't see in a lot of other counties, and quite frankly, we're much further ahead in this process than many other counties who are still fighting amongst themselves and whose sheriff and probation chief don't get along. So this is a benefit to Stanislaus County. But with respect to the numbers that Supervisor DeMartini mentioned and the cap we operate under, yes, we do operate under a consent decree. That max cap is 1,492 based upon design capacity of three facilities. Keep in mind that we closed 434 beds for budget. We lost 192 to fire. And in 2007, when we brought to you the master plan needs assessment update in expanding the public safety center before the economy put a stop to that project, we had already identified that we were 412 medium to maximum security beds behind where we should be, given our current population and our needs for the future. When you add all that up, that's where we're at. Now, we do have empty beds, 434 of them. So again, what Chief Powers mentioned, in this partnership and flexibility, if the funding comes in and the CCP says this is how we're going to fund what we're doing, then we'll potentially reopen some of those beds so that we do have space to house people appropriately, offenders in the community. I'm again, side by side with Chief Powers in that we should be placing a greater emphasis on community-based programs because those are more effective at the local level. They're certainly more effective and efficient with respect to costs because community-based programs are less expensive than incarceration. So we're going to reserve some of those beds for people who need to be incarcerated. But we're going to place a greater emphasis on community-based programs, and one of those that I really want to get out there are our work crews. I believe that we can, with some of this money, expand our alternative work crew program, and that takes care of things like landscape maintenance in the parks, graffiti abatement, beautification projects, picking up illegally dumped trash throughout the county. There's a lot of good things we can do with this, despite our concerns about adequate, sustainable, protected funding. And so I think that you have a good partnership, you have a great plan. I'm really very, very happy to have Chief Powers in the lead, and we're going to pull this together. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. At this time, then, I will open it to the public. Are there any concerns? If not, I'll bring it back to the board for comment or motion.
Make a motion to approve staff recommendations.
There's a second.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Been passed. We now will go to to scheduled matters. 905, Diane Ha.
You get me instead. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. I'm Matt Machado, Public Works Director, and with me this morning is Mike Wilson. He manages our special districts. And the first item before you is a public hearing to consider the approval of the fiscal year 11-12 assessments for all of our CSAs and our LLDs, which are landscape and lighting districts. With that, I'm going to turn it over for a more detailed report that Mr. Wilson will provide.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning. This is a request to conduct a public hearing to consider the approval of the fiscal year 2011-2012 assessments for county service areas numbers 4 through 26, the Del Rio Heights Landscape Assessment District, and the following landscape and lighting districts: Bret Hart, Bystrom, Howard McCracken, Laurel, Paradise South, Riverdale, Riverview, and Shackelford. In summary, compared to fiscal year 2010-2011, there are 11 special districts with assessments that will remain unchanged. There are 10 that will be decreased and 8 that will be increased. The 8 special districts that have increased assessments proposed each have an assessment formula in place that will calculate the assessment and will not require an assessment ballot procedure. All the proposed assessments are in compliance with Proposition 218. There are 6 staff recommendations for your approval at the conclusion of the public hearing. Staff requests that anyone wishing to comment during the public hearing please identify the name or number of the special district they wish to comment upon. Chairman Monteith, before opening the public hearing, are there any questions for staff?
Any questions by board? There isn't this time.
Then we recommend you open the public hearing, sir. Okay.
Now it's open to the public. Any comments? Public wishing to make? If not, I bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion. We approve the staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Then moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. Now we'll go to our 9:10 a.m. scheduled meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors. This next item is a public hearing regarding the formation of the Kenwood Park Lighting District and the levy of a special benefit assessment. And with that, Mr. Wilson will provide a detailed report.
Now, this proposal to form the Kenwood Lighting District is based upon a request and petition by the residents and landowners of the Kenwood Park community. And at this time, staff would like to thank Supervisor Chiesa and Field Representative Jennifer Carlson for their responsiveness to the community's needs and their efforts to bring this proposal forward for a vote. Staff would like to remind everyone that the deadline to submit or change an assessment ballot is the conclusion of this public hearing. Owners of parcels within the boundary of the proposed Kenwood Park Lighting District have until the conclusion of this public hearing to submit or change their ballots. They may do so at the table at the back of this room where we have a representative from Public Works to assist them. If the staff recommendations are approved, the clerk of the board requests I announce that the assessment ballots for this proposal have remained closed, sealed, and closed, and will be opened and tabulated today in public view, July 26, 2011, at 2 p.m. in conference room 6079 of this building located here at 1010 10th Street in Modesto, California. This action is in accordance with section 53753E of the government code. Chairman Monteith, at this time, staff is ready to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any member of the board have any questions? Good sign. If not, I open it to the public. Anyone wishing to make comment? Since there are none, I'll bring it back to the board and ask for a motion.
Move for the five staff recommendations.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Thank you.
We will now go to the 9:15.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Kirk Ford, Planning Community Development Director, with me is Bill Carlson, Senior Planner. What we have before you today is a public hearing to consider a Planning Commission recommendation for a rezone on the Bystrom Road area over in the Ceres area. So, Bill?
Yeah, we have the rezone application here, 2010-14, Mr. Hotzog. It's in the Ceres area off of the corner of Eugene and Bystrom in the Ceres area. The Ceres is in the light yellow color here. The general plan designation is commercial. In the zoning here is plan development. It's PD 188 adjacent to Ritzum R1 just south of an H1 zone, which was a vacant gas station. And that's the building there. The applicant submitted a site plan. There's an existing building here that's being used as a daycare center. We'll get into that in a moment. It's basically to rezone this property to a new PD to allow for child care facility, senior care facility, residential facility, senior assisted facility, and rooming house. The senior assisted care facility will be for 15 beds, and the rooming house will be up for 8 residents, and the child care facility will be for 15 children. The building is existing, it's approximately 3,600 square feet, and there's no expansion being proposed with this application. Back in 1991, this application did come to the Planning Commission Board of Supervisors at the Planning Commission meeting. 16 residents had signed up petition objecting to the child care facility, citing potential problems with noise and traffic. The Commission had some problems, had some concerns with the traffic, with the traffic patterns. Commission wanted a safe loading area for children. The applicants came back with a revised parking plan, was submitted and was approved. When it went to the Board of Supervisors in 1991, general plan had changed from low density residential to commercial. Rezoning went from single family residential R1 to planned development. And it was the only thing that was approved for was for 45 children for a large daycare facility. This project here, there's no development scheduled since the building's already existing. The only physical changes that will occur, the changes will only occur if there's a change to existing child care use. Physical changes would be interior modifications to the building and any parking lot expansion or modifications. County planning staff and the City of Ceres have no objections to the child care to any of these uses, provided that they meet the development standards. In order for the rezone to be met, must be consistent with the City of Ceres general plan and the county's general plan consistency. The proposed use is not detrimental to commercial and residential uses in the area. The rezoning to a new PD would be consistent with the general plan if it's this type of use, and that it's consistent with our sphere of influence policies and is supported by the City of Ceres. We did go through a general, an environmental review on this project. Staff is considering that this thing's categorically exempt since it's only allowing for minor applications to the existing structure. Back in June, the Planning Commission held a public hearing. One neighbor did speak about the on the project who lived across the street. He was opposed to the project when it initially went in. And he had concerns about any additional parking that could be on this property, as well as the upkeep of the property. The applicant representative spoke in favor of the project. He requested that the Planning Commission remove 3 standards. One of them, was 14, which was that each room had to be designed to provide individual privacy for adult tenants. One of them was to pay the sewer connection fee, and one was for the grease interceptor for the kitchen facility.
The city planner for the city of Ceres came at the meeting and had no objections to removing number 14 and 15, which is the privacy condition and the public sewer condition, since it was, since it had just got connected and the payments were made for the city for the to the city sewer system. Nobody has inspected the grease interceptor for the facility, so that condition was still left on there. Planning Commission voted 6-0 and recommended to the Board of Supervisors approval of this request and removed development standards 14 and 15. Staff's recommending 1 through 14 on the recommendation of approval and approval of this rezone application. Staff's available if there's any question, and the applicant and his representative are also in the audience.
Supervisor O'Brien?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That was
okay. Anyone on the board have any questions at this time? If not, I'll open it to the public. Anyone wishing comment? If not, I bring it back to the board. Oh, excuse me. Come right ahead. Pardon me. Excuse me.
Thank you.
I need to rush you.
Chairman, members of the board, staff, good morning. For the record, my name is Terry Murphy, and I do represent the owner, Mr. Hartsock. I'd just like to state that I do not have a PowerPoint presentation. And I also don't want to waste your time restating the case. We feel that the staff report, along with the discussion and decision of the Planning Commission, stated for us. But I did want to take this opportunity to thank planning staff for their help, especially Bill Carlson. Yes, an applicant thanking a member of staff. And to make myself available for questions if you have any.
Any questions?
I just have just a couple. I'm very familiar with the area. I used to have a friend lived across the street from the building. But you have an application for various possible uses. Have you settled on what it is you want to do with that building? You've got child care, senior care, residential.
Well, what we're asking for is an opportunity to make good economic use of the building and of the site. Our first choice remains child care. Now, we realize that's probably the most intensive use of the site, with 45 kids allowed to be on site. That's the maximum number. However, it is a use that both the owner and his wife are enamored with and would like to continue with, and it's very unfortunate that funding for this use fell apart a couple of years ago, and they've had to scramble around trying to find a new use for the property. Ideally, that would be the number one use that they would like to make of it. Secondarily, senior housing, since Mr. Hartsock has just turned 90, and I'm getting to the point next month of turning 65, we're kind of looking at that use as well as being the...
I'm going to be 39 next month.
So that's our intent. How that works out economically, we're not sure. So we're just trying to see to it that we have some options that don't currently exist.
Any other questions?
Is the grease separator, is that part of the facility or not?
So because it's commercially zoned, it's now required and it's being installed. Okay, the only thing that hadn't been inspected at this point was the grease interceptor, so we left that, or staff requested that it remain on there. Everything else was taken care of. Connection to the sewer line wasn't in existence until within the last 12 months, so we connected to it as soon as we could, even though that requirement came down from the decision in 91. We did what we could. Present.
Any additional comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If there are no additional comments at this time, I'll bring it back to the board and ask for a motion.
Any motion to approve?
There a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Thank you.
We will now go to correspondence.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. At this time, is there any member on the Board of Supervisors have a report? If not, we'll go to the Legislative Fiscal and Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, it is a slow time in Sacramento right now as the state legislature is in recess. A great deal of interest and effort being put forth to continue to develop the maps for state redistricting. We see that in the news each and every day. On the federal level, it's all about the federal debt ceiling with the members of opposing parties squaring off and very little being accomplished at this time. We're hopeful that an agreement will be reached in the next several weeks in time to address the looming deadline.
Thank you. The Board of Supervisors, sitting as a Stanislaus County in-home reporting service public authority, will call to order. And consent calendar, do I have a motion to accept the consent calendar?
So moved.
There, second.
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 Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We now get down to the public forum. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time on this subject? If there's no one, I bring it back, and this meeting is adjourned. Now, let's go to the county council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have a closed session this morning sitting as the Board of Supervisors. First is public employee appointment to consider the position of Chief Executive Officer. This is held pursuant to Government Code Section.